Up next is Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio. Pete's Ponderings is a selection of Pete's candid commentary on everyday issues for Kiwis, taken from his show, Afternoons. Listen to the live broadcast of Peter Williams' afternoon show at 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
All right, weren't yesterday's politics fascinating? The Stuart Nash saga unravelled pretty quickly when it was revealed that Jacinda Ardern's deputy chief of staff knew about the email that Nash sent to two of his donors back in 2020, detailing things that were said around the cabinet table, an absolute no-no. Now, this woman, Holly Donald, in Jacinda Ardern's office at the time, was either stupid, naive, or dishonest. Stupid not to know she should have referred it upwards, naive to believe that she could get away with it because all ministerial emails and correspondence are kept forever and subject to official information requests, or dishonest because she didn't want her Prime Minister to have the embarrassment of a political scandal. Either way, it is a juicy political scandal, which frankly is an indefensible nightmare for the Labor government. So they needed a distraction. Oh, I know. Let's tell the people of Auckland they can have a second harbour crossing and we'll start building it in 6 years. We haven't actually decided what kind of crossing that will be, but we'll start deciding soon. I thought it was a genius move. It wasn't even an announcement about an announcement. It was an announcement about a decision before an announcement. Let's just say that Marama Davidson and Stuart Nash have made it a pretty bad week for the Prime Minister, Chris Hipkins. But let's come back to this woman, Holly Donald, in the Prime Minister's office in 2021 when the email surfaced from Stuart Nash to Troy Bowker and Greg Loveridge, the donors. I've decided that Holly Donald is, of those three options, I've decided she's dishonest because she's the one named by the former Hamilton West MP, Gaurav Sharma, as the person who took a seminar on how to get around tricky OIA requests. I think Dr. Sharma was right on the money there. Now, nobody in the media industry was surprised about the Today FM shutdown yesterday. In fact, only last week I had a text from a friend of mine who works there. Actually, he used to be my producer at Today's predecessor, Magic Talk. He wrote then, and this was just a week ago, last Friday, he said, "I'm not sure if there's much of a future left for Today now." This was after he had revealed to me that all the staff at the station had to undergo rainbow tick training after a couple of hosts, Leah Punnipa and Miles Davis, made the unconscionable and apparently unacceptable claim on air that only women can have babies. Gee, let's just say that talk radio with a liberal left outlook on life has never been a viable commercial concern. It's frankly no surprise they went belly up. Mind you, times are tough in the media and advertising industry right now. Have you watched TV1 lately? All their commercial breaks are full of promos for shows on TVNZ Plus, the streaming service. I see hardly any paid-for commercials when I watch The Chase or Country Calendar, which are about the only programs I watch on TV1. Sky TV has laid off 170 people. Stuff still has the begging bowl out, asking for donations at the end of most stories. The industry is in some state of malaise. I guess it's a reflection of the economy. When times get tough, where do businesses look to cut costs? In advertising and in marketing. Things will change. It might just take some time.
You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR. Reality Check Radio.
Do you care about the New Zealander of the Year awards? Do you care that much about awards in general? I have to say I became very cynical about them quite a long time ago because their main purpose seems to be that the recipients can use them for marketing and career purposes afterwards, like such and such is award-winning this or award-winning that, and how many awards, frankly, are quite meaningless. If you are going to have awards, the best ones are those decided by public vote, but they're quite often hijacked by block voting anyway. So the Maori astronomer Rangi Matamua was named New Zealander of the Year last night, which is nice for him, But is Matariki something many people really care about beyond a day off? Did he have a major influence on the way New Zealanders feel about themselves or felt about themselves during 2022 compared to, say, Ruby Tui? Interestingly enough, in a straw poll public vote before the announcement on who should win the New Zealander of the Year award, Ruby Tui was a long way ahead and Rangi Matamua was fourth out of the four finalists. Let's just say the judges misread the public mood based on that. And then there was the Young New Zealander of the Year award, this trans rights activist Shanil Lal. Fresh from organising a protest come riot in Auckland last weekend and shutting down the opportunity for some women to speak about how they feel regarding transgender women in their private spaces. Let's just say the organisers, and indeed the sponsors of the New Zealander of the Year Awards, have not done their credibility much good with the winners that they named last night. Now, this is what essentially a local issue is getting more and more traction on a national basis. How much longer can the government keep fending off the pressure from Dunedin Council and Dunedin residents and the mayor about the cuts to the new hospital? Sadly, I think they'll be bloody-minded about it until the National Party make a stand on the matter and say that they will reinstate the original plan for the new hospital and will wear the cost of the budget blowouts. But at the moment, the Nats are hardly saying a word about this, and I think have more or less indicated that even if they are the government after the 14th of October, they won't be going back to what was first promised to the people of Otago. So that means if neither of the major political parties are prepared to spend up on a hospital that will be fit for purpose for the next 50 years, then what hope have people in the south of the country got? It is an incredibly short-sighted decision to worry about $100 million in a $1.6 billion project that is likely to blow out to at least $2 billion by the time it's finished in 6 or 7 years anyway. And then to make it worse, the Minister of Health, Aisha Verrill, who comes from Invercargill and went to med school in Dunedin, implies that she can't rule out further cuts in the project as it gets underway. You know, the way things are shaping, there are a couple of seats in Dunedin in Parliament up for grabs for the Nats if they would commit to upgrading the plans for the hospital. I think the issue has become that important in the south of this country, but the National Party for now just do not seem interested. This is Reality Check Radio, RCR, and there is a piece of legislation going through Parliament at the moment which is not getting as much attention as it should be. So it was really good to see News Hub a couple of nights back highlighting some of what is going on. I'm talking about the Therapeutic Products Bill, which is planned to replace the Medicines Act. But it is going to make life more expensive and, I believe, more inconvenient for many of us, while looking for all the world like it's protecting the interests of the big drug companies. News Hub had the story of a terminally ill woman who currently gets a life-extending drug which she pays for herself. It comes in the mail from Bangladesh. It still costs her about $1,000 a month. But the new law would make it illegal to import the drug, and she would have to pay AstraZeneca, part of Big Pharma, $10,000 a month for their version of the same drug. The drug is not funded by Pharmac, presumably because it's too expensive and because too few people need it. So how can this be good for the health of New Zealanders? What is so wrong with people making their own decisions about their own health and importing drugs from offshore if they can arrange it and can afford it? Who would be the only losers, or who are the only losers when that happens? Yep, the only losers are the big drug companies. To which we should all say, boo, bloody who.
You're listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Some comment now on a local story, but I believe it's a national issue. The issue being one of transparency and honesty in politics. I have to say that I've always enjoyed the politics of Otago Regional Councillor Michael Laws, a former National Party Member of Parliament back in the 90s. Then he became the Mayor of Whanganui. These days he lives in Cromwell, and he's my local regional councillor. But I enjoy what he does and what he says because he seems to make a habit of questioning the status quo, and he doesn't stand for any politically correct nonsense or self-serving council activity, as in the case of the ORC, an overpriced new building in Dunedin. But he really broke out a couple of nights ago with a post on Facebook. He says on his Facebook post, "I need to alert you to a fact. Otago ratepayers paid for a lie," which he says, he writes in block capitals, "paid for a lie to be published in their local newspaper. A sad day for honesty," unquote. And he showed a picture of an advertisement in the Otago Daily Times from a couple of days back, which purports to correct any inference in a story about the resignation of the council's former chief executive, Sarah Gardner. Now, the Otago Regional Council chair and the acting chief executive are maintaining that Ms. Gardner, Sarah Gardner, left the job of her own accord and was not terminated, not fired. So Laws is saying the content of that advertisement is a lie. And that's a big call because as an ORC ratepayer, I want to know why Ms. Gardner received such a huge payout when she left, in excess of $200,000 plus her accrued leave. Yet we're told she left of her own accord and went off to a new job in Wellington. Now, Michael Laws knows that he can't be punished for this. He's an elected councillor, and he's calling out some secretive activity which spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of our money to fix what was, well, a dysfunctional relationship between the former CEO, Sarah Gardner, and the council. I hope that Michael Laws can provide us in due course with more information about this, because it is money that belonged once to the people of Otago and is not being spent very wisely. All right, now when you have an income of nearly $190 million a year, you would think that $600,000 of government money is neither here nor there. But it seems it is to New Zealand Rugby. The money they get from Sport New Zealand, that is, through the taxpayer, through the government, is dependent on them having 40% of their board female. Now, I have to say I find this whole business of quotas false and unnecessary. Frankly, if an organisation has to have a government-mandated quota on its board, then it's got some problems. I'm a great believer in merit and in the best person for the job. The world has got by pretty well over the years with that philosophy. But then this government decided that wokeness and diversity should be more important than skill and experience. So it's bullied national sports organisations into playing their game. New Zealand Rugby is about to lose the services of a man very well connected in world rugby, a very experienced board director, a very experienced sports administrator. And they're going to appoint a woman to take his place so that there will be 4 women out of 9 on the board of New Zealand Rugby. And that means they will not lose $600,000 in government funding because they will have met the diversity quota. Good for them. Let's just ensure that the new woman, whoever she is at New Zealand Rugby, will make certain there is no repeat of the Scott Robertson fiasco.
You've been listening to Pete's Ponderings on RCR, Reality Check Radio. Remember, you can catch Pete's full show combining smooth sounds and candid commentary on everyday issues for Kiwis and the Peter Williams Afternoon Show on our live broadcasts, 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.